Holding that, my mind.
That's how it was resolved through the criminal courts, that was through their negotiations.
Okay. So is it fair to say then that the judge in this case was very gentle?
No, they.
Or did I explore that?
I think that what you're looking at are two different things. I think what, and Mr. Greer can, I'm sure, express it for himself. I think what he's looking at is the actual blood alcohol content and the circumstances of the offense and the explanation. What the criminal court did is they resolved the matter through the criminal justice system. And they, obviously, a plea was reached in this case, and the judge had the discretion to accept it.
Okay.
So that's a separate matter of how they resolve the case. But I think what Mr. Greer is looking at is the actual blood alcohol and then the licensee's explanation of the circumstances of what happened. Coupled together, he's raising a concern regarding whether or not this is an issue for this licensee. Mr. Greer, you can either confirm, deny, or explain.
That was an excellent summary.
Thank you.
So you would like to interview him, basically?
Yes.
Is that true? Okay.
I would support that if that's your motion.
Yes, it is.
Okay, then I'll second that as a motion.
Okay, and then we would need to have, are you going to be calling him in for an informal hearing? Because we would have to have some, possibly an additional finding, conclusion of law added to that. Which would be what? I'm getting to it.
Our gateway one.
Well, no, our gateway one would apply because you have a rule that deals with the, that requires individuals to timely report.
There's a statute as well. Right,
right, there's a statute, and then there's also the board has a rule.
Okay.
And I believe
the IRS, the rule is 32,
3208. And the rule is AAC R424312. And what it states is, as required by ARS 323208, an applicant, a licensee or certificate holder who is charged with a misdemeanor involving conduct that may affect patient safety or a felony shall provide written notice of the charge to the board within 10 working days after the charge is filed. And then also, I would ask Mr. Greer to identify if he had any other conclusions of law he'd wanting to include, such as potentially 32, 20, 44, 8.
Ms. Baskin, I have a question.
Right.
Is this a little bit alibi realm of responsibility? I mean, the fact that we're dealing with is that he did not report within the 10-day period. I mean, the courts have decided because of his DUI. I'm just asking if we're outside of our...
The issue, I
don't believe it was on a... I don't know a schedule. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is a fair question, Ms. Hunter, and I think that is the board's discussion. I think that I would have Mr. Greer articulate it a little bit more, but I think his concern is with the level of the BAC, is there like an issue with alcohol for this licensee? He was not working. This was on the weekend. This was on a time when he wasn't working. It was on an evening.
And that may be the conclusion that we come to, is that this is not an issue, but that was a really high BAC, and it was taken 2 hours after the accident.
Right. I'm just asking if he comes before us, I'm assuming he's going to say, no, I don't have a drinking problem. Where do we go from there?
Yeah, and that's what we'll have to decide then.
Okay.
Yeah, in the past, we have required substance abuse evaluation.
Okay, I'm just throwing that out there for discussion.
I do have some feelings that are similar to Ms. Sanders about governmental overreach DUI item of this, I think, has already been whacked once on it. I don't know that another government agency needs to take a second whack on this. I'm surmising that with 25 years of experience, and if he's been driving since 16, he's from New York. He's been driving a car for at least 40 years. There's nothing in his legal papers that I saw that this was a problem of recidivism. I doubt that he suddenly became an unresponsible driver. I think the situation he describes, he had a choice that he can no longer drive after drinking and risk the health of a friend, that in his only way of contacting her, she was unusual about not having her cell phone. And she had various health issues and he didn't know how to contact neighbors. So I don't see any evidence that there is a problem. And some of it is by, you know, extrapolation and assumption, but generally I don't see that people start having problems that we need to explore when they don't have anything other than what I consider a reasonable reason, perhaps, to knowingly drive after drinking because of a friend's health. So I can't support that part of sending this to a formal hearing and doing what the courts, I think, already did.
Yeah, I just don't believe, licensee, that you get that inebriated based on the explanation that's provided. The whole story doesn't make sense to me.
Well, the only thing that makes sense to me is why didn't call Uber?
Well, why didn't call Uber? You know, his statement is, I had some wine with dinner, but then it's a .20. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of wine. And so what I see is an explanation given 18 months after the event. And I just have concerns that addicts tend to lie, and that's my concern. And we may not get anywhere with it, but I'd like to at least bring them in for here.
Okay, I'll support it. Any other discussion? Hearing none?
The motion before you is to move to an informal hearing. Ms. Hunter?
Aye.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Dr. Miller?
Aye.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Aye.
Dr. Bastillo?
Aye.
The motion passes 6-0. Next item.
You're at 11 o'clock.
Next item will be number 5B, review, discussion of possible action, a motion for rehearing or review in the following case. E1, case number 1711, Jay Goodfarb, and I'll be your team.
Jim, can you pull up the script? Thank you.
Okay. And for the record, Mona Baskin is stepping away from the table, and John Talier will be representing the board.
John Talier.
Okay.
Don McDaniel for Jay Goodfarb. Who was Jay Goodfarb?
Thank you. under AR, under AACR 4-24-308, the board may grant rehearing of case in part or in whole or review the decision if moving party established that one or more of the grounds listed in the rule materially affects its rights during the administrative hearing. The board has reviewed the request for rehearing or reviewed the response to the request. Each party will have 10 minutes to address. Am I on the wrong thing?
No.
Nope.
Okay.
You're
okay.
No, you're fine.
I just heard something.
No, you're okay. You're good.
No, you're good.
Yeah. Each party will have 10 minutes to address the board on this matter. This is the time for legal arguments related to the grounds for rehearing or review, and the party should not use this time to present new evidence or testimony to the board regarding the merits of the case. Please clearly identify and explain the grounds that support the rehearing or review. In moving party claims there is a newly discovered material evidence, please identify each piece of evidence and why it could not have been presented at the hearing. Now we will proceed with the oral argument. Okay. Okay. We'd like to swear. Do we swear you guys in?
No, this is simply oral argument based on the matter set forth in the motion.
Okay.
So there's no testimony taken.
Okay. So do I open? Okay.
It's their motion, they have the burden, okay. And so they get to start.
Okay. Councilor, would like to make a statement.
Mr. Vice President, members of the board, I'm going to go backwards a little bit here because I think it's important that we know where this started. Mr. Goodfarb came here in 2015. Among other things, at that time, he was told his handwriting is illegible. He needs to start doing all of his notes on a computer. At that time, the board investigator recommended a documentation class. The documentation class that the board ordered Mr. Goodfarb to go to was taught by the same investigator that recommended that he needed the class. So we had a problem with that because there was an appearance of impropriety. Moving forward, April 2017, the board opened a new complaint against Mr. Goodfarb, again alleging documentation errors, and the nexus of the initiation of that complaint, it arose from the complainant saying that Medicare was rejecting payment based on Mr. Goodfarb's documentation. Now, when the case came before the board, one of the board members said, well, I looked at all this and I feel like Mr. Goodfarb should have been making handwritten notes, soap notes, in addition to what's in the computer. Problem with that is that the board specifically told him in 2015 that he couldn't do that anymore. He had told him not to make handwritten notes, then he comes back and he said, well, I wish we would have had some handwritten notes. Another board member at that time, when we were here in November 2017, said, and I believe it was you, Mr. Clinton, I apologize, but I think it was you that said, I have a problem, I have a concern with the amount of time that's passed between these notes that were made in 2015 and the fact that we're not looking at it until November of 2017. Because then there was a two-year delay between what you were looking at in the present time. And then without explanation, the board waited another year after we were here in November 2017 to issue the order to us. I still don't understand what that delay was about. No one has told me. Now, the board has repeatedly said to Mr. Goodfarb that documentation is so important because if someone needed to pick up Mr. Goodfarb's notes, they should be able to go forward with that patient and not have any kind of delay or problem. Now, I can tell you, I've been representing Mr. Goodfarb since he got the complaint from this board. I picked up your order, and I could not understand it. It made no sense. I called the board's attorney. She looked at it. There were parts of it that she said, you're right, this makes no sense. To me, that's ridiculous for a board to take a year to issue an order and then send me an order that even its own attorney can't understand. You see in my motion for rehearing details out our complaints and our concerns with this, but in short, that order was issued a year after you told us you were going to issue it. It was internally inconsistent. There were sentence fragments. There were things in there that just made no sense whatsoever. Now, I'm also really concerned about the board ordering monitoring services without telling us what the monitoring services are. That's arbitrary and capricious. What the board says is, we want you to get the kind of services that are offered by Arizona Professional Monitoring or Affiliated Monitoring, Inc. That's arbitrary and capricious because you're not telling us what you want. You're not giving Mr. Goodfarb the opportunity to go out and find a board-approved monitor because you're not telling us what he's supposed to be doing. To be blunt, we're not using Arizona professional monitors because we think it's improper for the board to be referring respondents to people that worked for the board or were members of the board in the past. We're not going that route. We thought there was an appearance of impropriety in 2015 when you sent us to a documentation class run by your investigator. We feel the same way about Arizona professional monitoring. Affiliated monitoring, once I found out the real name of the company, because the board had it wrong in the company, that's a national company. I looked them up online. They have offices in Boston, DC, Chicago, Madrid, they're everywhere, but they're not in Arizona. So again, we have a problem because we don't want to use somebody who's affiliated with the board. We also need to find somebody who's in Arizona. And we don't think Mr. Goodfarb should have to pay a company that's out of state to come in and learn Arizona law, to do some type of monitoring that you haven't even told us what kind of monitoring it is that you're expecting him to do. If you want monitoring, you have to explain what it is. We don't even know what we're challenging because the board hasn't been clear. And I'm here to tell you that monitoring a guy who's been practicing for 50 years and never had a patient problem seems a bit ridiculous to me. But if the board feels it's necessary to correct documentation errors, alleged documentation errors, that are almost 4 years old at this point, we're going to tell you that since November 17, since the last time we were here, Mr. Goodfarb has been audited in three different agencies by Medicare with the CHOPS, and there have been no issues with his documentation in that time. He's been, over the past 18 months, suffering the stress of being under this board investigation, being under the process of the board. He's been suffering monthly payments to me to represent him in this matter. This has just been hanging over him. And again, the board has not explained why it's taken so long to process this when in the past year the board has done absolutely nothing. Now, when we were here in November of 2017, the board told Mr. Goodfarb, we're going to issue this order. There's going to be an option for early termination after 3 months. If this board had acted reasonably, this whole thing would have been behind Mr. Goodfarb already. And again, I want to remind you that we're talking about errors that allegedly occurred in 2015, and we're going into 2019 in a couple weeks. And to me, this just seems ridiculous. But we're still here. We're at the mercy of this board. And the motion for rehearing that I filed 2 months ago, again, sets forth our position in detail. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I'd like to have some time for rebuttal after your attorney speaks if necessary.
What is it exactly you want us to do? Do you want us to rehear the case?
Well, what I'd like you to do is issue an order that makes sense and to provide me an explanation as to why it took a year to issue an order in the first place. Because without understanding that, I can't really do a proper motion for rehearing or a special action to the Superior Court to determine whether or not this board is doing what it's supposed to be doing.
So you want us to grant your motion to rehear and issue an order that corrects inconsistencies in the board order?
Corrects the inconsistencies, explains what type of monitoring is expected of Mr. Goodfarb, what type of monitoring you want him to have. And also to, like I said, explain to me why it took a year to issue that order, because legally speaking, that's a concern that I have, is why this case sat for, I don't know if it was a full year, it might have only been 11 months, because I know we were here in November 17, and I think we got the order in October, so 11 months. Why it took 11 months for this case to go forward?
And the inconsistencies I have, there's requirements regarding, I'm just reading from your motion for reconsideration. And with all respect, I couldn't figure out what you wanted for your motion for reconsideration. So maybe you have clarities on both sides. And I wasn't here in November, so maybe I'm not as familiar with this case. But why don't you just tell me exactly what the inconsistencies are that you want us to fix?
Okay, well, in the motion for rehearing, the first one is the board offered no explanation for approximately 11-month delay.
I got that one.
The second one, the provisions regarding continuing education for Mr. Goodfarb were unclear because the order said that the continuing education was stayed, and then it said that he shall do the continuing education, and that a continuing education certificate was a requirement for consideration of termination of probation, but that documentation would never, happen if it was stayed.
I got you.
Number three, the provisions regarding monitoring are inconsistent.
Gotcha.
That one where it says that, you understand that one? Okay, the monitoring is unclear as to the scope. Did you understand that one?
I don't understand how, you have the timeframe of the monitoring, which I understand, and then you have, you don't understand what the scope of the monitoring is. I got that.
Okay, but you understand my argument as to having a problem with the scope of the monitoring, correct?
That you don't know what the scope of the monitoring is.
That the board is not identified.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I understand.
Number five, there was a provision regarding notification of employment practice restriction, but there weren't any notifications or practice restrictions in the order, so I don't know if the board was unclear in identifying what it was trying to do.
So you want us to take out that paragraph?
Sure. And then the provision regarding documentation review was inconsistent. And you understand that one?
Yeah, how?
The order said that a monitor shall review a minimum of 3 charts and billing records on a monthly basis, and after 3 months, he could petition for early review, or I'm sorry, to allow for monthly reviews. In the meeting in November 2017, the board said that after 3 months, Mr. Goodfarb would have the option for early termination.
Gotcha.
So they're telling him one thing, and then the order said something completely different.
Okay.
And our problem now, legally speaking, is depending on why this board took 11 months, has to do with latches, which is, you know, I know one of you mentioned earlier you don't know all the legal ins and outs, but you can't simply delay a case without explanation to the prejudice of the other party. And I believe that Mr. Goodfarb has been prejudiced. And that's why I'm asking this board, how has he been prejudiced? By the stress, the legal fees, and the legal fees are a big part of it. The other part of it is, when we came here in 2017, there was already a 2-year delay. You're already asking him to remember and look at notes that are 2 years old. Now you're asking him to look at things that are 3 years old. And by the time we get to an actual hearing, they're going to be 4 or 5 years old. And I understand that things happen and that there can be delays, which is why I'm asking for an explanation. I'm not saying that the board did anything bad or wrong. I'm trying to understand why this took 11 months. And that's why that's part of my motion for a hearing. That's part of what I want the board to do, because I, as Mr. Goodfarb's representative, need to represent his legal rights. And if that means further expense and time of going to court, that's what we have to do. But I'm trying to understand your position and give you an opportunity to tell us what you're doing. Because all I see are inconsistencies and delays, and it just doesn't make any sense to us.
Do you have copies of the letters of the audits from the other agencies?
I don't have them with me.
To the agencies,
right. The agencies may have letters, but Mr. Goodfarb wasn't given letters.
Okay. So they came in, did an audit, and you never heard back.
Yeah. I'm sorry, and?
And you never heard back from them.
They passed.
No, they passed the audit.
Okay,
Mr. Goodfarb, he didn't hear any negative comments. There was.
Yeah, but do you have the letters that state that he passed the audit?
The agencies have those letters. We don't have them, but we could get them if you need them.
They were recertified. They were recertified Medicare, so there was no problem.
Okay, so it's what I'm hearing you say. I'm just repeating to make sure I understand it.
Yes.
Is that? You get, they came in, did an audit, everything looked fine according to them, and they recertified you, and they don't send any type of notice like you've been recertified for this period going into the future.
My understanding, and Mr. Goodfarb can correct me, is that he works for agencies, and the agencies get audited, and when those agencies get audited, they're looking at Mr. Goodfarb's record, and then it's the agency that gets recertified with Medicare. based on the fact that his documentation didn't have any errors, didn't have any problems, everything looked fine by Medicare standards. So the agency gets the recertification letter because it's the agency that has the Medicare certification, not Mr. Goodfarb himself. Oh, and he says that as part of the process, the auditor actually accompanied him on patient visits.
I do remember this case, both cases I was here. I think I'm the one that said that Mr. Goodfarb should write more notes. I should have said typed more notes because documentation even typed was not good. It should have been, excuse me?
He was just commenting the same thing that we had said in November, that the software has limitations as to what he can type in on the notes. So that was...
The software only has human being deficiencies. I'm a PTA, I do software, so please don't use that excuse. As far as the ProTac, it's my understanding that Ms. Heller teaches that to people that are ordered, and that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and then Ms. Donahue only assists for people who have not had discipline in the class.
So I'll make two clarification points. One, Mr. Goodfarb's order was to do a documentation course. It would have been his choice to choose that course to attend. The board did not direct him to take that course specifically, is my recollection. And secondly, I am a volunteer for that course. Ms. Hiller does all the didactic teaching in the morning. I do records review in the afternoon for people who are not under board order.
And I know that because I took that course.
I would like to go into the executive section to get legal advice.
Second.
Okay, would you like to call it?
Ms. Hunter?
Aye.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Aye.
Dr. Bastia?
Yes.
You're now recording.
Okay. It is 11:35 a.m. Okay.
Am I allowed to ask a question at this point?
Yeah.
Am I allowed to ask a question?
Sure.
Did either one of you ever contact board staff to say, why is this taking so long?
I did not, because I don't believe that Mr. Goodfarb should pay me to
help
the board
Goodfarb?
Do his job. I don't believe so, because he shouldn't be contacting the board because he's represented by counsel. My understanding is that if Mr. Goodfarb contacted the board, they would tell him they can't speak to him because he's represented, so I would have to do it. So no, I did not contact him. I would not have advised or... had I known, I wouldn't have allowed Mr. Goodfarb to contact you either.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Greer, would you like to...
I am reviewing the board order, and I'm not seeing some of the issues that are raised in the motion to... rehear.
Can I clarify something for Mr. Greer? There were two board orders. After I filed my motion for rehearing, there was an amended board order.
Oh, okay.
So some of the issues were corrected, some were not.
So I must be looking at the amended issues. Amended board order.
I think the amended one says on the caption that it's an amended.
Corrected board, yeah,
correct,
corrected
yes.
Order of probation. So
right.
Does the corrected order of probation address many of these issues?
It addresses some of them, but
what
again,
doesn't it address?
Doesn't address number one, the delay in the time. It does not address the scope of the scope of the monitoring hasn't been corrected.
I'm looking at paragraph four, on page four, 2B. How is that not the scope of the monitoring? Well, what's unclear about that?
The part that's unclear is on page 3, lines 25 through 27.
3. How is that unclear? I'm sorry.
The monitor shall provide monitoring services such as those offered by these two companies.
Okay.
The board needs to tell us what monitoring services they want, not just that there are things that are provided by those companies, because in the same paragraph, the board is telling us that Mr. Goodfarb can select a neutral and objective board monitor.
Okay.
But he can't select one if he doesn't know what services they're supposed to be providing.
Okay. Is there anything else that the corrected board order doesn't correct?
I think it's those two items.
So, and just on timing, it appears you filed your motion for rehearing on the 12th, and the board order was corrected on the 12th. Did they just pass in the mail?
No. They did not pass in the mail, and the copy of the board order correct that I was given doesn't have a date on it. So if you have one that says the 12th, I'm going to think that it might be backdated. I don't have my computer with me, but I did receive this via email after I filed the motion for rehearing.
It says it was mailed to you on the 12th.
Well, it was after I filed the motion for rehearing. And like I said, my copy is not dated.
Did you email the request for rehearing?
I emailed it and I sent it via priority mail.
Okay, but you did email it.
I believe I emailed it to your attorney.
Okay, that's my question.
I may have emailed it to your attorney. Again, I don't have my computer, so I can't look at it, and I don't recall exactly, but I know I did have extensive conversations with your attorney about the issues, and then we determined that I should just file a motion for rehearing because the two of us couldn't work this out without the board's involvement. So. I don't remember the date of our conversation. I know it all happened relatively quickly after I got the first order, but I don't. I apologize. I don't know the dates.
Okay.
Mr. Clinton, members of the board, I don't know if I'm allowed to speak. I just wanted to clarify something that Ms. McDaniel said that she may have just misspoke. I'm Mona Baskin. And she did contact me about this case, but I didn't, and she did talk to me about concerns that she had. I was not present at either the November 17 or December 17 board meeting, so I was unaware of it. And she described some of her concerns, but I did not advise you. She said she was going to file a motion for a hearing, and I said, well.
Oh,
I did not advise you to file a motion.
I didn't speak. She didn't advise me to, but after a conversation, I determined that that's what needed to happen because her and I didn't have authority between the two of us, by my understanding, to correct the things that were in the order. She did give me guidance on, for example, one of the things was the initial order from the board said affiliated monitoring, which is actually an alarm company that puts alarms on people's residences, and she explained to me that that was supposed to be affiliated monitors. She helped me locate the website for affiliated monitors, and that's when I pointed out to her that they don't have presence in Arizona. Her and I did discuss those things. And again, I don't remember the dates, and she didn't advise me to do anything. It was just after our conversation I realized, based on what we had discussed, that we couldn't resolve all of these issues without a rehearing before the board.
So is your concern that you do not want to use this monitoring company?
One of our concerns is we don't want to use either one of those monitoring companies.
Which monitoring services would you like to?
We can't select monitoring services because we haven't been told exactly what the board wants to monitor.
Well, obviously, if he was cited for documentation problems, it would be on his documentation.
Okay, well, obviously, if that's what the board wants, the board should have said documentation review.
It does say that.
It's on page 4, lines 25 through.
Are you looking at the corrected?
We're looking at the corrected order.
Okay.
And this is, and I don't want to cut off discussion if everyone's having it, enjoying it, but I've reviewed the motion to review, to rehear. I've also reviewed the grounds, the 7 statutory or rule grounds by rule, which we can rehear it. I don't think this motion for rehearing meets any of the 7 grounds for rehearing. To the extent that the corrected order is not the final board order, I think it would be appropriate to grant the motion to rehear solely to clarify that the board's final order is the findings of fact and conclusions of law and corrected order of probation. I don't think any of the issues raised in the petition, I think that order addresses every issue that is raised in the petition. I don't think there's any unclarity about what the board is ordering. And so that's where I would go with this. I would move to grant the motion to rehearing solely to clarify that the finding of fact, conclusions of law, and corrected order of probation is the board's final order.
Mr. Vice President, members of the board, I think it would be to grant the motion for review as opposed to rehearing.
It's titled motion for rehearing.
And it's really brought as a motion for rehearing or review.
Okay. I will accept that.
Hey, can I clarify something with regard to the motion, just so I don't have to file another motion? When you're granting, or when you're saying that this is the final order of the board, is it final effective the date that you're saying has been put on it, or is it effective today, and so we have 35 days to review this corrected order before it becomes final?
That's a good point. I would have it, I don't know, lawyer, what do you think?
Since you are affirming it as of today, I would suggest that it be, the time frame begins today.
I would agree with that.
I would agree.
And so, just for clarity, we are granting the motion for review to affirm the finding of fact, conclusions of law, and corrected order of probation as of December 18th. That's my motion.
Second.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Okay. Dr. Yonge.
Ms. Hunter?
Aye.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Goodfarb.
Finch was scheduled for 11:30.
Router Raymond Finch is 11:30.
Correct.
So he's passed by.
Correct.
Time for Finch then, right?
Yeah. Correct.
Okay. It's already been noted that Dr. Miller has returned to the table.
The next order of business is under 5. Discussion possible action for rehearing or review in the following case number 17-33, Raymond Fitch.
Raymond.
morning.
Good morning. This is the date, time, and place where the request for a rehearing or review filed by Mr. Finch is scheduled to be heard by the Arizona State Board of Physical Therapy in case number 17-33. Will the parties please identify themselves for the record, starting with counsel for the state?
John Talier, from the Attorney General's Office, is the independent advisor to the board.
Scott King, I'm the attorney for Mr. Finch.
Graham Finch. Under AAC R4-24-308, the board may grant a rehearing of the case in part or in whole, or review the decision the moving party establishes that one or more grounds listed in the rule materially affected its rights during the administrative proceeding. The board has reviewed the request for a rehearing or review and the response to the request. Each party will have 10 minutes to address the board on this matter. This is the time for legal argument related to the grounds for a rehearing or review, and the party should not use this time to present new evidence or testimony to the board regarding the merits of the case. Please clearly identify and explain the grounds that support rehearing or review. If the moving party claims there is newly discovered material evidence, please identify each piece of evidence and why it could not have been presented at the hearing. We will now proceed to oral argument. Mr. Finch will present first, followed by the state of Arizona.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. We bring this motion for rehearing or review really for two bases, that the penalty imposed was excessive and that the findings of fact do not fit the facts that we presented to the board. In this case, we have the treating orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Brown. We have the treating PA orthopedist, Mr. Brooks, and a doctor-prepared expert, Dr. Ellenbecker, all saying that Mr. Finch met the standard of care in his treatment of this patient. We have gone through, Dr. Ellenbecker did, went through each and every charge, and we prepared a declaration from Dr. Ellenbecker and presented it at the hearing, and he indicates that Mr. Finch met the standard of care in all respects regarding this patient. In terms of the specific charges, one of the allegations is substandard care because the physical therapist's interpretation of the results of the examination pursuant to R24-304-B5, and as we stated in our response, Mr. Finch documented under that the physical therapy goals and plan, that the patient demonstrates signs and symptoms and diagnoses that will benefit the physical therapy services at the time. Mr. Finch had to do an analysis of the patient's objective findings in order to come up with the statement that physical therapy services would benefit this particular patient. And Mr. Finch also documented that the rehabilitation potential for this particular patient was fair. Again, an analysis had to be performed to come to that conclusion. Mr. Finch rated the patient's impairment rating at 80%, and that her predicted outcome was listed as 20 to 40%. Under the clinical rationale for therapeutic intervention, Mr. Finch documented the plan of care includes interventions or referrals to address the patient's pain. He also listed both short-term and long-term objective goals to increase, under short-term goals, for the patient to report 50% improvement in symptoms with all ABL usage. Under long-term goals, the patient will increase range of motion by 50% to facilitate functional activities such as eating, grooming, and dressing. Under another long-term goal for the shoulder, Mr. Finch documented, the patient to show 90% or greater strength in all planes compared to contralateral joint to perform all ADL and work tasks unrestricted. I would like to mention as well, as far as I'm aware, the requirements listed in the R4 304B, they list basically a number of categories to be included, but in my review of the law and the rules, I did not see anything that requires what the physical therapist should put in those particular categories. And therefore, to hold a physical therapist to a standard where there's nothing that states what you should be putting in there and saying, well, it fell below the standard of care when there is no standard, I think there's no way that a person could know what he or she needed to put in that particular section. In terms of the next category, it talked about the goals and whether or not there should have been a change in the plan of care. We prepared and submitted a affidavit from P.A. Brooks, who again was the treating physician assistant in this case, and he specifically stated that on May 15, 2017, and May 17, 2017, a re-evaluation of the patient was not indicated as the patient had not failed to progress as expected, nor had she sufficiently progressed to warrant a change in the plan, given the patient had only 4 physical therapy visits before May 15, 2017. And P.A. Brooks also looked at the different plans of care over time and stated, again, in our affidavit, that these treatments that were provided by both Mr. Finch and Mr. Fiore were medically necessary and was consistent with the plan of care that he wanted for this patient. There was an issue about after the patient had a week off that P.A. Brooks had ordered, whether or not there should have been a reevaluation at that time. P.A. Brooks specifically stated in his affidavit that he did not require a reevaluation of the patient, and had he required that, he would have done it himself. We also included an affidavit from Dr. Brown, again, the treating orthopedic surgeon. He said, in part, it is also my opinion within the realm of reasonable medical certainty that unfortunate events can happen postoperatively, even with reasonable and appropriate postoperative rehabilitation, such as Mr. Fiore and Mr. Finch apply here. So Dr. Brown is saying that Mr. Fiore and Mr. Finch provide appropriate postoperative care, and it was in compliance with the plan of care that he wanted for this particular patient. There was an issue about whether or not there should have been maneuvers applied on May 15th and May 17th that went to strengthen. In the progress note by Mr. Fiore, he indicated that, he said, quote, this is for May 15th, 2017, Mr. Fiore said under assessment, patient tolerated treatment well today with no visual or verbal signs of pain or discomfort. Today's treatment was focused on stretching and strengthening was avoided. On May 17th, Mr. Fiore documented, patient tolerated treatment well today with no visual or verbal signs of pain or discomfort. Today's treatment was focused on stretching. It was also our expert's opinion, Dr. Ellenbecker, that Mr. Fiore and Mr. Finch both met the standard of care in this case. We given the facts, given the evidence that we presented, given the treating physician's affidavit, the PA's affidavit, the declaration of Dr. Ellenbecker, our expert, it is our contention that the penalty imposed, probation, and the other penalties listed in the order are excessive, and that the board should have considered this evidence and the conclusions and findings of fact are inconsistent with the evidence presented. Thank you.
Real briefly, I wasn't here when this case was heard. Were these affidavits presented to the board?
Yes.
Okay. And as I understood your argument, the sole grounds for the excessive penalties is basically because there shouldn't be any penalties because the board got it wrong.
Yes.
Okay. There's no separate argument that probation and 6 hours of continuing education in this case was excessive.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes. Because you have to have a statutory violation.
Exactly.
In order, yes.
That's the argument.
Right.
It's not that you should have gotten 3 hours instead of 6 hours.
Right, right. Exactly.
Thank you.
Yes. And if I may say, the underlying issue, not because you weren't here, just briefly, the underlying issue was, and what brought the complaint to the board, was the patient said that Mr. Fiore did a passive range of motion of the patient's arm, and that as a result, the patient sustained multiple fractures, a comminuted fracture of her shoulder scapula. And we presented evidence from a board-certified orthopedic surgeon, trauma surgeon, that it would have been impossible for that to occur during passive range of motion. And that was what the patient stated occurred. In addition, that physical therapy appointment allegedly occurred on a, or did occur on a Friday, and there was no complaint about all these multiple fractures to the orthopedic surgeon until the next Tuesday morning. Thank you.
Mr. Finch, I specifically remember Dr. Miller going point by point.
I'm sorry, would you declare which Dr. Miller, please? I'd want to make that distinction.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to
to the board sure member, President that, Dr. Miller.
Yeah, I also want to make sure that we're not related either.
No.
Okay. That, was
that he point by point asked you questions about documentation, why this wasn't in, conversations with the PTA, with the doctors, which you admitted at the time you did not do. So I don't understand this rehearing.
I'm sorry, I don't really understand the question.
And I'm saying that during the original hearing, our president, Dr. Miller, asked specific questions about documentation that Mr. Finch said I didn't do. He admitted that.
Well, I think the response to that is the documentation is there, and we specifically pointed to it both at the hearing and our prior responses and in our motion for rehearing and review. I mean, those pieces of documentation are there. The board can see them.
Where are they?
Well, they're in our responses, and I was referring to them.
But in the information that we had at the time, the investigator presented, they were not there. And Mr. Finch could not explain why they weren't there.
Well,
I remember this case very vividly.
Well, we have included all the documentation, both in Dr. Ellenbecker's declaration.
I saw that. He wasn't there.
We went through point by point. Some people testify better than others. And people get nervous when they're here before the board, but we have presented and provided all the examples that refute the charges made by the board. They're there for the board to read, and they were part of our responses, our declaration, and they're in there.
We had the declarations before. We read the declarations before.
Well, I think they speak for themselves.
I disagree.
That's why we have it here.
I would move that we deny the motion for review or rehearing or review.
I second.
For discussion, let me give you my different thoughts why I'll vote to deny. Your orthopedic specialist, Dr. Miller, he was the only one of the people who gave an affidavit who came to the interview. I remember I had several questions for him for clarification. And I asked him whether he had ever been a PT, because I have two friends who were PTs, and then they became medical doctors. So I wanted to know if he had ever been a PT in the state of Arizona or another state. He said he had. I was also curious if he had ever been a lawyer, because I know two lawyers who subsequently got a medical doctorate degree. So I wanted to know whether his perspective included experience as a licensed PT or a licensed doctor, because I think there's some confusion about our conclusion about substandard care. Second thing is, I didn't know anything about Dr. Brown or Mr. Brooks, likewise, ever being a licensed physical therapist or a licensed doctor, that when they're giving their testimony, like Dr. Miller, that they understood our definition of substandard care was based upon the documentation. A lot of your comments at the previous hearings and in your response were whether or not a medical doctor, an orthopedic surgeon with vast experience and knowledge, and Mr. Brooks and Dr. Brown, I think we're looking likewise at this case from whether they're clinically satisfied about the standard of care. Our perspective was more on the legal side than the documentary side. Now, why is this important? I was in town in 1983 when Arizona became the fifth state in the country to have a practice act that did not require a physician prescription. Now, certainly in this case, where you have an orthopedic surgery, following the prescription and referral, I think is tantamount to good ethical clinical practice. So I don't want to confuse the issue. But what is important about our practice act since 1983 is that physical therapists can practice independent of a referral. What's significant about that factor combined with the surgery is that the physical therapist is 100% responsible for everything done and documented. How does that pertain to this case? Because much of your discussion for why there should be a rehearing is based upon the expertise and perspectives of Dr. Brown, Dr. Miller, and Mr. Brooks. From a legal standpoint, you're looking at clinical standard of care and their expectations. They were not, in any of the statements, looking at the statutes specifically for me to reevaluation. With your response in November of last year, your written response to this board, you stated that Mr. Finch agreed that he should have done a reevaluation documented on May 15th, and then again in July after the patient complained about having a possible phlebitis. In the first case, there is no documentation supporting that a reevaluation was done. In the July instance where reevaluation should have been documented, Mr. Fiore documented that Mr. Finch had done an exam and ruled out a phlebitis. And he had a discussion with Mr. Finch about proceeding after the patient's concern about it being phlebitis. Well, Mr. Finch, are you Dr. Finch or Mr. Finch?
Mr. Finch.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Finch and Mr. Fiore agreed in that letter in November and agreed in their testimony this spring that, yes, they're required under statutes
to have a reevaluation done with May 15th and in July after the floodlights. They both testified that there was some discussion after he performed a reevaluation and reviewed the chart. That is a critical standard of care, that material, the discussion and the examination, the reevaluation, be documented, and it wasn't. In our discussion in earlier this year, when we heard this case on an informal hearing, our reason for substandard care was more directed toward the documentation. And I'll tell you why I believe a reevaluation in those two cases are necessary. For May 15th, in the chart system that I understood and I had asked before, you share a documentation system with the referring Dr. Brown and with the PA. So, Mr. Finch and Mr. Fiore, in looking at that chart, a week after the previous visit, should have known or knew that the patient had called their office and had also gone to Mr. Brooks, and that in the documentation, the pain had gone from 3 to 8. Being a math person, the pain is now 3 times worse. Number two, Mr. Brooks withheld physical therapy for a week. Number three, there was an obvious change in the plan of care. It was documented that we did stretching only and withheld doing any strengthening. That is a change in the plan of care from what was originally written on April 25. So when the statute states under reevaluations that fails to progress as expected, there is nothing that was presented in the previous hearings. There was nothing presented in your written response. There is nothing today that's been presented that shows that you believe that you expected that to happen on the 15th. So, when a person's pain goes from 3 to 8, you change the plan of care from strengthening and stretching and withhold the strengthening and fail to document why you did that. What's your clinical rationale? It's not there. And both Mr. Fiore and Mr. Finch, with their testimony, said they should have done a reevaluation on May 15th. Now, with regards to the July episode of phlebitis, Mr. Fiore documented that Mr. Finch did an evaluation of phlebitis, ruled it out, and they had a discussion, and then they proceeded with the care. I believe, I've been told, I don't know this for a fact, but most board exams that PT take, there's a question in there about phlebitis, and the reason is, it's a silent disorder to most lay people that many times will cause a sudden death. And so it's critical that a physical therapist be aware of when people have pains that don't fit orthopedically, and they can do a differential diagnosis to determine whether it's the same soft tissue that's causing the pain in any of the limbs, or whether it's a phlebitis issue. That is truly, without exaggeration, a life or death situation, clinical scenario. And so for only Mr. Fiore to document that Mr. Finch did a reevaluation to rule out phlebitis, not document his clinical reasoning, the clinical tests he did, and how he came to that differential diagnosis, to me, is critical to that charting and critical to writing a reevaluation. With all due respect to Dr. Ellenbacher, I would have loved to have this discussion with him to explain on a
documentation level how Mr. Finch met the standard of care. Lastly, with regards to the disciplining folks, throughout this case, I believe that you, Mr. Finch, and Mr. Fiore have been highly respectful. I've trusted everything you've said. We have some disagreements, I think, about the documentation and the clinical rationale being included in the documentation. If we had thought that Mr. Finch or Mr. Fiore had a high degree of ethical issues, for those individuals where we believe there is a high degree of ethical dilemmas, we'll do something more strong, like a probate class or something similar to that. When we think the ethical issue is mild, we would give an ethical class. We did neither with Mr. Finch, because I think, at least speaking for myself, but I believe the impression of the board was that he's an honorable man and he's been very ethical for all this. I don't see this as an ethical issue. I think asking someone to take a documentation course, have a monitor go in, is reasonable, because our primary duty on this board is to protect the public. So we'd like to have that verification when a monitoring system goes in there that this experience for Mr. Finch, understandably uncomfortable, but hopefully it will rehab his practice and his license so we never see him again here. Last thing I think is important as a sidebar. It's my belief, and it may be shared by the other board members, the substandard care that we're talking about here being regarded to the documentation is not the substandard of care with regards to clinically what was performed. There's a distinction there. Secondly, most of Dr. Miller's testimony to me was a great explanation on causation. The board here, at least for me, has no interest, had no statements, had no perspective to go into the issue of causation. And I wouldn't want anyone to extrapolate that belief. Does anyone have any other discussion?
No, I think you said it very well.
Any further discussion? If not, Dr. Donahue, would you do roll call, please? Before we do that, would you reread the motion?
The motion is to deny the rehearing. Ms. Hunter?
Aye.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Dr. Miller?
Aye.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
It's a vote of 7-0 to deny the hearing.
Thank you both.
Six.
6-0, I'm sorry.
So, Mr. Teller, you're here. We still have two board items.
Yes. Okay. The next item that we're going to act on is 5G, number 1, case number 13-45, Michael Rich, PTA.
So, as introduction, I'll find it in a minute. As introduction, the board requested that we sit with Mr. Lyons and Mr. Rich to see if we could come up with a consent agreement, which we did, which is the consent agreement before you that Mr. Rich has agreed to. The differences in the findings of facts, conclusions of law remain identical. What has changed is the removal of the suspension from the board order, and a reduction in the fine. Every other board requirement is still intact. The reason we made these concessions was due to the timeline of the delay of almost 5 years for Mr. Rich, and the fact that he was not present for the formal hearing. So the board can either accept this or we can proceed with an appeal.
Make a motion to go into executive session for legal advice and to review personal documents.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Dr. Donahue, do the roll call, please.
Ms. Hunter?
Aye.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Dr. Miller?
Aye.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Bastia?
Yes.
It is 12:18. Can you pause that?
Okay, it is 12:24. We are back in regular session. Well, something remind me, did we have a motion on the floor?
I moved to accept the consent agreement.
I'll second it. Any further discussion?
I would like to say something just for it to be on the record.
Sure.
And I wish Mr. Rich were here. In ARS 3220.44.5, it says, in regards to PTAs, you must not exceed your delegated activities. Your area, you are a certified individual and cannot work beyond your delegated authority. Mr. Rich was unethical, irresponsible, and extremely brazen and arrogant that he treated people as if he were a PT. I felt that his actions put patient safety and health in jeopardy, and as a PTA, I am appalled at his lack of professionalism. Therefore, I am not approving this consent agreement.
Does anyone else have any other statement for the record they wish to express? Hearing none. Dr. Donahue, would you please do roll call?
Ms. Hunter?
Nay.
Mr. Clinton?
Yes.
Dr. Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Bastia?
Yes.
The motion passes on a vote of 5-1. Next item of business we're going to take out of order. We're going to go to 5H, number 7, case number 1820, Keith Pritchett.
This is Mr. Greer. I would move that we offer Mr. Pritchett a consent agreement based on the unlawful practice matrix, and if he rejects the consent agreement, to invite him to a formal hearing.
I'll second, and I'll just read for the record that the duration of unlawful practice under the matrix for 6 to 14 days, as Mr. Pritchett is for 13 days, is 90 days with early termination. Probation period of 90 days with early termination option. Okay. That's a $100 fine. He must take the jurisprudence exam. He must provide evidence of having notified any employers, any payers, any patients. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Dr. Donahue, would you please do roll call?
Ms. Hunter?
Aye.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Dr. Miller?
Aye.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Bastia?
Yes.
That motion passes by a 6-0 margin. Are you staying on?
No, they're going to
switch.
I think it's time for me to say
well,
goodbye.
That's why we need to wrap it up. At this time, Mr. Tyler is leaving the board table, and we appreciate his participation.
Thank you.
Thank you all, and happy holidays.
You too.
Thank you.
Safe New Year's.
And at this time, Mona Baskin is returned as our assistant attorney general. Okay, our next item is 5H, number 6, case number 18-23, Eric Coleman.
Thank you.
this is a little difficult because I know this was at a time when the board was very busy. It was difficult to get through. But did Mr. Coleman ever send a letter informing the board?
No, he just notified us on his renewal.
All right, thank you. That's what I wanted to know.
Any motions taken action?
No, this is a complaint.
Do you like to reword it?
Dismiss. Thank you. I need a motion to dismiss.
I'll second.
Who seconded, Jim? You seconded?
I did.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, I have
issues with when you have a case where, you know, this is drug, you know, 0.08, blood alcohol, but still a failure to notify in a timely manner. It always sets a bad precedent in my mind when you don't enforce the law and regulations that the board has stated. DUIs as a serious matter as they should be, and just dismissing this in my mind sets a bad precedent.
Would you be comfortable then with a
non-discipline? A what?
A letter.
Advisory letter.
Does advisory imply?
Yes, you can.
Non-disciplinary reminder of the time frame.
Advisory letter?
Yes, advisory letter.
Correct.
So it's a non-disciplinary advisory letter.
Right. And your definition of an advisory letter is the issuance of an advisory. Yeah, it's non-disciplinary. Oh, it's on page 17, but it's behind a tab, and it's ARS 3220-45B2, and it's the issuance of an advisory letter is a non-disciplinary action to notify a licensee or certificate holder that while there is insufficient evidence to merit disciplinary action, the board believes that the licensee or certificate holder should be educated about the requirements of this chapter and board rules. An advisory letter is a public document and may be used in future disciplinary actions against the licensee or certificate holder. I believe that would be for the failure to disclose under the statute and also under AAC R424-312.
So you have a motion on the floor. Hold on. Hold on.
We do have a motion on the floor.
You have a motion on the floor now to dismiss. You need to vote on that or withdraw it to do another motion.
Is there any other further discussion? Hearing none. Dr. Donahue.
So this is on the motion to dismiss. Ms. Hunter.
Nay.
Mr. Clinton.
Nay.
Dr. Miller.
Yes.
Dr. Greer. Mr. Greer.
Take it.
No.
Ms. Remick.
Yes.
Ms. Dr. Castillo.
No.
Motion fails by a 4-2 vote.
I would move that we issue an advisory letter stating that the licensee should be aware of the requirements to disclose as set forth in an ARS
3208 and AAC R424-312.
Thank you.
Do you know what
is
blood alcohol?
Any further discussion, please.
We don't
Let's not have private conversations.
We don't know what is blood alcohol. It doesn't say. And it's in California, so
right.
I don't think
Oh, I see.
Oh.
Right. Which I think this makes this case different than the other one. Mm-hmm.
I also would like to positively reinforce the fact that he self-reported at all.
And at least according to his letter, he attempted to contact the board at the time during the period in which
it was difficult.
Oh, just for a point of clarification,
right.
This occurred in 17. We were not
right.
in the renewal system
no,
in
true.
17. Just
right.
so you know that there was probably no difficulty contacting the board in December of 2017.
Is the requirement when you're charged or when you're convicted?
No, it's when you're charged, criminally charged, and I believe that you have a charging document in there from California that indicates it wasn't during the time.
Okay.
of the renewal issues.
You know, personally, I have a problem with this, because if this were me and I couldn't get through to the board to self-report like I know I'm supposed to, I would drive up here to self-report or write a certified letter or something.
Yeah.
Any other discussion on the motion?
The motion again is for the advisory letter reminding them they leave.
Would you reread it, please?
So the motion is for advisory letter to advise awareness of the requirements to disclose as indicated.
Would you please do roll call?
Ms. Hunter?
Nay.
Mr. Clinton?
Nay.
Dr. Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Bastia?
Yes.
Motion passes by a 4-2 vote. The next item is 5I, number 1. Case study number.
I think it's 5H8.
I was out of order. I am corrected by my colleague here. We are now going to.
It's just a question. You can go and whatever.
So which one are we doing? We're going to do 5H8, case number 18-26, Sue Brugger.
I would move that we offer Ms. Brugger a consent agreement based on the continuing education disciplinary matrix. If she does not accept, that we invite her to an informal interview.
Second.
Okay, let's state for the record.
Here it is. Do you need it?
For a 20-hour deficiency would be a $500 civil penalty, Arizona law exam, and 6 hours in ethics.
And Dr. Miller, members of the board, I think it's in her response. She claims that she tried to attempt to file inactive and filled out the wrong application. However, that doesn't preclude her from signing the affidavit that she completed her CEUs.
She did sign it?
She did.
Okay. I think the matrix was intended to give us a ballpark level of fairness that we treat all people the same. Again, I'm troubled by this candidate. The person's been a therapist 40 years. I've been in town 39 years. Every therapist I know knows August 31st, got to renew. Everyone knows you have 20 in education to do. And then you signed it. So I think there's some malicious intent here that goes beyond average. So I'm just a little uncomfortable. Is anyone else uncomfortable?
Where are you getting the malicious intent from?
Just that she knowingly signed a document.
She knowingly lies about the identification. It's not someone that's new in town. Most therapists I know a lot of therapists. We talk. A lot of times you tell your friends in August of the evening years, August of the evening years, hey, you know, I haven't done any continuing yet, renewed yet, da 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 da. You know, and so just to sign it off, she's just playing. She's playing that she's not going to get audited. And to me, I don't know, I'm just more comfortable with someone lying. It's not like she's a young grad or new in town. So
Dr. Miller, are you suggesting that we do something more than the matrix?
That's what I'm saying. I think she's getting an average response when she doesn't deserve such leniency. So I don't know what on there can be added.
I'm not sure that I could find intent in here, and so for that I would rely on the matrix.
That's all right.
She's not practicing, so I don't see the harm. So I'm in line with the matrix.
Yeah, I'm in line with the matrix, but going to Dr. Miller's point, you know, as a licensed professional, true in a different field, I am quite aware of my CPE requirements and, you know, and mine are you know, four times as high as our PT. So, you know, you, if you were licensed, you know what your requirements are. And I just don't buy excuses that she wasn't, you know, didn't do it. So I kind of agree with Dr. Miller. There's more to the story than she's saying, but I think the matrix in this case, it should be sufficient.
Okay. Any other discussion? Dr. Donahue, would you please do a roll call?
Ms. Hunter.
Aye.
Mr. Clinton.
Aye.
Dr. Miller.
Aye.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Ms. Remick.
Aye.
Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
The motion passes by a vote of 6-0. And now,
matrix or informal. Informal. Okay.
Agenda item 5I, number 1, case number 1730, Cody Hansen. He's looking for one of two things or both, to take a class online and or extend them for 6 months.
Based on his email, I don't see why he needs 6 months. Sounds like he needs 3 months.
I agree.
So I would move to grant an extension, extending the date from December 31st. Is that when's the current deadline?
Yes, that's
correct. December 31st to March 31st, to 2019.
So a 3 month extension?
Yeah.
I'll verify the date.
Any other discussion?
Who seconded?
I did.
Thank you.
Silently.
I guess.
I heard it.
Then it occurred.
This light's not working.
Oh.
Okay.
You need your hand.
I guess you just figured you didn't need to turn it on for me.
Yeah, does anybody else have red lights on the
right? I really didn't say anything.
Oh, mine's green.
I didn't really say anything.
Red light?
I think I'm okay with that.
No light?
No light. Okay, so we need two.
Can you all hear me in the back?
So we need another one for Mishka's turn.
Okay.
Okay. Any discussion? Hearing none. Dr. Donovan, would you please do roll call?
Ms. Hunter?
Aye.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Dr. Miller?
Aye.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
All right.
Okay, now our agenda item number 6. Review, discussion, and possible action on delegate to the FSB PT compact. A, reassignment of delegate to replace Mr. Clinton's appointment.
So, Mr. Clinton, I don't know if you want to explain what your role is so that other people have an idea, but we have to have a representative from our board to be on this committee as part of the compact. And so somebody has to step up and take Mr. Clinton's place as his term ends next month.
The time that's involved is fairly nominal. You know, I think I've done it since Ms. Richardson left the board, and we had two phone meetings. Each was under an hour. So in 6 months, less than 2 hours. Since I went to the delegate assembly for the FSB PT, they did have a meeting there that was a couple hours. And there was a couple of delegates who phoned in for that. So if you're not our delegate, you could phone in for that. And that has been the time, besides reading the documents they sent out in preparation for the meeting. The time frame is not too onerous. A lot less than before.
Would any of you like, I guess I should look this way. Would any of you like to volunteer yourself? Or volunteer one of the other two?
I'll do it.
Thank you.
Oh, good, Josh.
You don't have to be a PT or a PT.
No, I'm not.
I know.
I think we should vote on that.
I make the motion that Mr. Greer replace Mr. Clinton's appointment the FSBPT contract.
Real quick, what does FSBPT?
Federal State Boards of Physical Therapy.
Probably should know that. Doesn't change my answer.
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none. Dr. Pound, would you please do roll call?
Ms. Hunter?
Aye.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Dr. Miller?
Aye.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Bastille?
Yes.
Motion passes by a 6-0 vote. Next item. Seven.
So before...
I haven't missed anything yet.
No, you're doing pretty good. So before Mr. Clinton starts, I just, on behalf of the board, want to thank our outgoing board members for their service to the profession and to this board. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Miller, I'll stand for this. You don't have to, because I know. I give you this wonderful plaque, appreciation of your service to the board, but more importantly, to the people of the great state of Arizona. I have been incredibly appreciative of the way you explain things, your line of questioning, your clarity of thought. I think you have been a board members I've seen over the years, the top one or two, you know, and it's been a great honor to serve with you, and you have been offered for what you're getting paid. You have done a great job.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I agree.
I just want to say thank you to all of you, and a special thanks also to the board staff who've given me advice and legal and in history and investigation, and for the wonderful staff, thank God you guys are so computer literate. Yeah, how much that helps me. I have an award here, or a gratitude of thanks on behalf of the board and state to Miss Peggy Hahn. I want to thank you. I think you had great attendance during the time.
Thank you.
I appreciate that you are always very open and honest with us. And I appreciate your service.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I really appreciate this. This has been an experience, and even though we haven't always agreed, I've always appreciated your opinions.
Thank you. And to Mr. Clinton, I'm always impressed when physical therapists want to dedicate time to their own profession. I think that's something we all should do. But there's a little greater appreciation in me when someone who's not a physical therapist and they're willing to dedicate themselves to this. And I've noticed with Michael over the years, one of the things that I was so impressed about was how eager he was to learn physical therapy documentation. He has an uncanny, to me, scope of understanding of physical therapy practice documentation. I think that was just all his preparation and work. And I also always appreciate how he talked to me and disagreed. You're so nice.
I want to thank the board staff. You know, you guys make us look good. You know, your dedication to your jobs. And, you know, every time someone, this is a state employee, I go, wait a minute. You know, you haven't met the staff at the PT board. Yeah. You know, because your dedication and, you know, experience with Chuck, I experience it now with Karen. You know, you call, get, you know, an answer, you know, nice. And just the dedication is wonderful. And the state is so lucky to have you.
I agree with that. Thank you as well. And I'd like to thank Ms. Baskin for her legal advice through the years. Thank you, Ms. Baskin.
And then I'd like to take this moment to introduce our new board member, Ms. Kelly King.
Hi.
Okay, next item, agenda number 8, discussion of possible action regarding unlawful practice, matrix, and or continuing competence.
So in, I'm not sure I've looked at these two matrices side by side until we had these cases. And so it It looked like, or appeared to me, I'm asking for the board if they would like further discussion, if you believe the two matrices are equatable to each other, or do they not need to be? For missing 20 hours of CEUs, you have a $500 penalty, law exam, 6 hours of ethics. If you don't practice with a license for 90 days, you get a $250 fine. $250 fine, jurisprudence exam, and you have to notify your payers of that. So if the board likes both matrices and doesn't want any modifications to them, good. I just wanted to provide an opportunity to see if you wanted one or the other or neither to be revamped.
90 days is a long time to practice without license or to do
it. I think we should, you know, instruct staff to take a look at it and suggest some revisions.
What I would like is feedback. Do you think one is excessive and one is not enough, or
I've never seen them before today. And so
I only have the unlawful practice.
It would be in your drive as well.
It's on the drive. It's on there.
I think, you know, there's like 5 buckets on unlawful practice and 4 on the CPU. You know, kind of, I would merge them.
Well, you can't merge the two.
No, not the two. Merge them in the fact, but more of the buckets, you know, as you're saying, you know, the $200 civil penalty for the lowest, for 1 to 3 hours short, and then, but you could practice 5 days, and there's no civil penalty. You know, it's almost like you need to have, in my mind, a little higher civil penalty for unlawful practice.
I agree.
I can't see. I mean, it is low.
You know, I think they're all low.
So you would like modification of the unlawful practice matrix?
Well, I think you look at both and give us a recommendation.
So my question would be, as far as the continuing education matrix, are you looking to raise it, to lower it? What's your intent?
Have you looked at it?
Okay, it might just come back at you. Just like that.
My personal impression is that the continuing ed matrix, the civil penalty seems to be a little high.
Very good, thank you.
The greater sin, in my mind, is unlawful practice.
Mm-hmm. So that matrix should be weighted heavier.
Higher.
Yes. But that's not to say that, you know.
Again, once you look at it, you may reach a different decision.
Well, you might.
I won't be here next year, but I'm kind of looking the other way. Here's my thinking. When someone does unlawful practice, it's an act of omission. Whereas someone doesn't do an education, they then commit an act of lying to the board and the people of the state by stating they did the continuing education and they believe they can get away with something. So it's just my nature that we can, it makes
I'm
more
sure
sense.
I agree with that assessment.
That's okay. I just think that if someone commits an act that's wrong, that's worse than omitting to do something. That's just my thought.
So what we'll do is we'll revamp these and we'll bring them back for discussion and potential action.
Okay, next item is number 9, board business. The board may vote. No, no, no. A, executive director's report, review, discussion, and possible action. 1, financials.
So I've provided you the most up-to-date financials. We're well within our budget due to a lack of a staff member, and so we're well under budget. As a result of that, we are actively trying to upgrade our IT by our scanners and printers are almost 10 years old, so we are looking to replace some capital equipment with the excesses that we are going to realize this year, so because we will not have those funds in the coming years once everything is on board and loaded, so we're doing that. We also provided promotions to both Ms. Crowley and Ms. Cardosa. They had not had any promotions in their entire tenure here. And so Ms. Crowley is now the licensing administrator, And Ms. Cardoza is now the administrative service officer. What that does is increase their pay and increase their grade with the state, but we have also changed responsibilities. Given that when the e-license system is working well, there are many administrative jobs that we no longer do because the licensee does them themselves online. And due to those changes, we are heavying our staff on licensing instead of administration to help expedite the applicants as fast as possible. So that was the rationale behind the changes in titles and promotions. Very good. Then I wanted to give you an update on the continuing competency audit. So as you know, we limited the audit to 50 individuals. I was a little stunned at the outcome of the outcome of the audit. Six individuals, 12%, were non-compliant with getting their, for our small sample, six people did not complete their CEUs. Six people have not responded, and they're in their 30 days now to respond. Otherwise, a complaint immediately opens at the end of that 30 days. So we have six of those. And then we had 38, only 76% were actually compliant. So something to think about at the next renewal period on just those numbers. But I think for me personally, it was fairly staggering, the amount of non-compliance for such a small sample size. All right, so next we have rules revision. Ms. Hiller and I sat in the room across the hall for 3 hours and jabbered incessantly at each other as not a single person showed up to give any oral input for our rules. As a result, the oral input now has been closed. I have an email from Ms. Hahn, who is running our rules, and they are going to submit to GRRC. They're going to submit by December 18th, and I can tell you that that occurred, or it will occur by today, but it's already occurred. It'll be on GRRC's February 5th agenda, and once they approve it on that, it will be in effect 60 days later. So we're looking potentially April 5th or the early part of April to be a part of the compact.
All right.
Okay.
Well done.
Very good. And, oh, we have to talk about the elections and next board meeting. Because the next board meeting is on the 22nd and the terms of office expire on the 21st, no, we didn't do that on purpose, I promise. We will actually have no presiding officers for the January meeting, which means the very first order of business will be to elect those officers, and then those officers will assume their role right at that meeting. So I want you all to be thinking about who you want to be president, vice president, secretary, so that we do that right at the beginning so that we have presiding officers for the January meeting, okay?
But no discussion amongst yourselves, just a private reflection.
And then hopefully you have all looked at your calendars because we would like to make these set in stone because we are already having to move some board meetings. Everybody's on this early to reserve these rooms. These are the proposed meeting dates. Does anybody need a modification?
I can't be here on February 26th, but there's no reason to change every other date.
It's board prerogative if you would like to change the date.
I'm okay missing one.
Okay. If so, I would like you to vote on these meeting dates for me, please.
Move to approve the board meeting date to support the motion.
Second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. Dr. Donahue, please do roll call.
Ms. Hunter?
Aye.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Dr. Miller?
Aye.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Ms. Bremick?
Yes.
Dr. Bizdio?
Yes.
Thank you very much. That ends the executive director's report.
All right. And then, Dr. Miller, members of the board, I may have the board respectfully request that the board revisit a set of executive session minutes, but may I have a moment?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you.
No, we postponed to January.
All right, but we could, right, but what we could do is, I went ahead and had, my secretary was able to make modifications and...
Do I have to leave the table?
No. Okay. You're, I mean...
So wait,
no.
So we're going to what?
No,
back
we
okay,
are
wait,
going
let
to go
finish.
Back to, let me just finish. We're going to, I'm going to respectfully request that we go back to agenda item two, C, that's the executive session minutes from September 25th, 2018. I was able to have my secretary make modifications and to those, and my and Mr. Talia was my transporter, so he brought them. And I just wanted to see if you would want to rescind your tabling to January, and I could provide the board with those for your review and to approve today so we can finish out 2018. But you'd have to rescind your prior vote.
Make the motion to rescind the prior vote regarding discussion of 2D. Oh, that's not right.
2C.
2C.
I second.
Any discussion? Hearing none. Dr. Connie, would you please do a vote?
Ms. Hunter?
Aye.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Dr. Miller?
Aye.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Basile?
Yes.
Okay. And may I provide the board with copies?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, ma'am. Motion to rescind 2C.
Right. Okay. Oh, to rescind the table.
This is for the executive session 2D.
This is for C, the September 25th executive session.
Thank you.
I would move to approve the September 23rd, 2018 executive session minutes.
I second.
Wait, stop.
25th?
Discussion. I'm not.
Yeah, September 25th, sorry.
Where, do we have a copy of the original one that I'm just not seeing in my
screen? No, this is the original one.
This is the original one, right.
September 25th, 2018 executive session.
I'll second. Any further discussion?
Yes, I'm not prepared to vote.
Let me know when you are.
Okay. And Ms. Remick, I'm not sure you were at this executive session.
That's why I'm having, is that why I'm having trouble?
Yeah, you were not present. You had to leave.
No, she left before. She did leave immediately
because
before.
I'm listed as present, so I
said we would remove Ms. Remick.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, we would place on your apps.
Right, we should be, well, she'd be
members
absent.
Members absent.
I apologize.
So we'll make that.
With that modification. Mm-hmm.
With that modification.
Thank you. And I will not vote on this then. Thanks. This is why I was needing a moment.
Understood.
Couldn't remember that.
You don't want to rush to judgments. Dr. Donahue, would you please do roll call?
Ms. Hunter?
Aye.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Dr. Miller? Dr. Miller?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Vote passes by vote of 5-0 and 1 abstention. Next item, a call to the Talkative Gallery. Does the gallery know they're being addressed to the gallery?
Care? No,
does anyone in the gallery
call to the
have anything
public?
They want to share with us?
Yes, I don't know. We thank the gallery. We thank the radio.
We thank you.
Hope you cannot respond to anything during the call to public.
That's true.
Do I have a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Second. Dr. Donahue, please do a roll call.
Ms. Hunter?
Aye.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Dr. Miller?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
And Dr. Bastillo?
Yes. And one on one.